Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our gift and divine reminder in our midst. And I greet all of you, the listening audience, those of you who have joined us in the chat room online, and those of you who have joined us via telephone, and my distinguished panel and host, and I greet in words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Thank you. It is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to bring to you a man who is dedicated to teaching the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and a man who is a diamond among men. He's a diamond among the FOI, and he's definitely a diamond among the Ministry of the Nation of Islam, Student Minister James Muhammad out of Tampa, Florida. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, my beloved sister Queen Aziza Muhammad. And I thank you, as always, for that glowing introduction. You give me, as I've always said, something to reach for, because I am nowhere near what you have laid on me. But by the grace of Allah, with the grace of Allah, I'll at least approximate it in this lifetime, Allah willing. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom we forever give praise and thanks. And we can never thank him enough for making himself known in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, the great Mahdi, and raising up from our midst his messenger, but more than a messenger, the Messiah, the exalted Christ, the eternal leader of the Nation of Islam, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we thank Allah and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad for that one whom they have fashioned and shaped and prepared for this critical hour at which we have arrived. The hour of which I speak is the hour of the judgment of the wicked and, of course, the righteous and the establishment of the kingdom of God on earth. And the man of whom I speak is our deliverer, the reminder, the comforter, the reformer. And I refer to him as my personal redeemer, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In their names, beloved panelists, those in the studio, on the phones, and online, I'm very happy and honored to greet you once again in the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
To our and to our beloved queen and sister, I call her Sister Gidget, and she, of course, is popularly known as the great Queen Aziza, Mariam Muhammad. And I want to thank you and our distinguished panelists, my beloved brother and big brother, student minister Victor Muhammad, hailing from the legendary and historic city of Detroit, Mosque Number 1, who is the Michigan State Prison Reform, Nation of Islam Prison Reform representative of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and he extends all the way down into the state of Florida. I want to thank him for agreeing to be on our show. Brother Victor is a magnificent, in my humble opinion, representative of one who is committed to the work of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and this mission of the resurrection of the dead. I want to extend the greetings to you, Brother Victor, and please give us a few words of introduction of yourself. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother James. You know, I have nothing but love for you and the believers and all across the world. And I'm honored and privileged to be extended the invitation to come and represent the prison reform ministry of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, has talked to us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I'm just thankful to Allah to allow me to serve you all in the capacity that he's allowed your brother to work out in this field that is desperately in need of more people to till the field. But at this point in time, he's got the right number until some of us wake up and decide that we have to understand that the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't go to prison because they did anything wrong, nor will the followers of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan when we start becoming persecuted. And many of us are going to see prison walls as well when they start their attack on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So we need to prepare this ministry so that we can fight on both sides of the wall for the resurrection of our people. So I thank you again for allowing me to be on your blog radio talk today. And I pray that my words are beneficial to everyone who is listening. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, as I'm sure they shall be, dear brother, by the grace of Allah. And also we have, as a distinguished panelist, our beloved brother. This is a brother whom I have worked with, had the privilege and honor of working with for many years. He served, of course, in the military of the Nation of Islam, the FOI. He was a squad leader, and ultimately he moved from New York to Tampa, and I was blessed to have him serve as our captain when we were the student minister in Tampa. He rose from the captaincy as a result of his great work and love and passion to preach the word. He rose from the ministry, from the captaincy into the ministry. He served for a time as the student study group coordinator of Tampa. He also served as the student minister or at that time, we hadn't have yet received our number, but he was the student coordinator. But all coordinators are ministers or student ministers in their responsibility. But he served in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is now the historic mosque number 95. So I am privileged and honored to announce to and introduce to our listening audience our beloved brother and student in the prison ministry and in every aspect of the ministry, Brother Ali Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Ali.
Brother James, Brother Ali expressed that he was traveling and that his phone may drop, and he dropped. So
wow.
He told me to call him back, and I'm calling him back. So he should be with us shortly. So we probably want to proceed until we get him back on.
All right.
I'm trying to contact him now.
Okay, well, praise be to Allah. Even in absentia, that which I have said of my brother, in my humble opinion, remains. it remains to be true. So we'll await his return to the program. In the meantime, we want to get started. Brother Victor.
Yes, sir.
First of all, how are the believers in Detroit?
We are doing fine by Allah's grace and infinite mercy, preparing for the leader to come here on the 17th of May, and we've got that confirmation, and we're starting to buzz the city up, wake them up so that they know that the messenger of Allah will be in their midst, delivering the most timely message at a most critical time. So that's where all of our mind is at, and that's what we're really working toward. And I mean, we're just excited. We're very, very, very excited. And as for myself, tomorrow will be the 17th prison I've been in since Savior's Day.
I've
logged over 3,800 miles. I've been keeping track of this. Spoke to over 1,700 inmates in this tour of the prisons, and by Allah's grace, I'm at Pugli Correctional tomorrow and at Macomb Correctional tomorrow evening. So if Allah pleases, I'll be delivering the time and what must be done to our brothers who are behind the wall at Kingsley, Michigan and Macomb, Michigan.
Very good. And may Allah continue to bless you in your effort. As always, dear family, I like to start off giving from the scriptures, both Bible and Quran, two scriptures which serve as foundational stones for the subject matter we're going to deal with by the grace of Allah this evening. The first scripture, I'll go, as I have always been taught, from the known to the unknown. Now, people are very familiar with the Bible, and some are familiar with the Quran. But reading from the 42nd chapter of Isaiah, the 6th verse and 7th verses, we read, I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles. The 7th verse reads, to open the eyes of the blind, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. In the Quran, reading from the 90th surah, Al-Balad, the city, reading from the 9th to the 13th verses, it reads, from the 8th verse to the 13th verse, it reads, have we not given him two eyes and the tongue and two lips, and pointed out to him the two conspicuous ways? But he attempts not the uphill road. And what will make thee comprehend what the uphill road is? it is to free a slave. So having read and recited those scriptures, Brother Victor, I'd like you to begin with your work in the prison ministry and the conditions of our people and the time and what must be done as it relates to our people locked down behind the walls of these institutions and, of course, your work in freeing them, of course, in mind and spirit. You have the microphone, Brother Victor. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow, that's powerful, Brother James. The one thing that I remember Stephen Biko quoted that said, the true weapon, the greatest weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. What they do to our brothers and sisters in prison is they first capture the mind. You know, and if you got the mind captured, the body stays put. They are locked into a thought process that their only way of salvation and survival is to bow down to their oppressor in these situations. That is why you see so much opposition to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, and even the Final Call being instituted into prisons. I mean, we've had to go to court. We've won court battle after court battle just to get the Final Call into the prisons. And that is because they know that once that light is shined into that dark cell, as the scriptures beautifully stated, once that light is shined in there, then the mind starts to click at its normal way. That's abnormal for a man or woman to survive with another man or woman in a 6-by-12-foot cell. So the thing is they have to get the individual to accept abnormal behavior, that which is not put together by God for them to survive and live in, and accept that condition, not only accept it, that start returning back to it time and time again. And that is when the mind has been totally imprisoned. And then what happens is when this great teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad reaches our brothers and sisters behind the wall, they start to rise above those thoughts that keep them in the gutter and in the sewer of this world, and they realize that, man, I am someone who God has taken the time out to come and see about me himself, and that I can rise above all the opposition that this world and its satanic forces put against me, and I can come out again a whole man, a whole woman, once again restored to my former self that I was just not aware of. They know that the knowledge of self is the number one teaching that a man or woman needs to rise above this criminal behavior. That behavior is not reflective of them. And unfortunately, some of our brothers and sisters believe that they are measured by the crime that they committed, not understanding that there are circumstances that were outside their control. And many of these, especially here in Michigan, these prisons and boot camps are in rural areas of Michigan, where the area's economy used to be farming and agriculture. And when farming and agriculture started to dry up and they couldn't make economics there, they leveled their fields and started building prisons. You know, and there's Detroit, Michigan, and then there's the rest of Michigan. And outside of Detroit, that's where all the prison houses are. So they take our brothers and sisters out to these prison houses, use them for cheap labor to fuel the imprisoned industrial complex. Now, I'm going to speak more on that later, of course, but they use slave labor and use it to make mass profits at the expense of our brothers and sisters committing crimes, that they do the crime in the city, but they do the time into the rural areas. And they bring money and economy and employment to the rural areas while the city is continually suffering. Then if they are paroled or given probation, they're sent back to the city where there is no jobs for anyone who hasn't committed a felony. So they are only aware that the dope man is always hiring, the breaking and entering man is always hiring, the car theft man is always hiring, and the murderer is always hiring. So our brothers come back and they see that there is no hope in this world, so they return back to the underworld. But the Time and What Must Be Done lecture series by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is dispelling all of that, and our brothers are responding so powerfully to this legendary teaching, and they understand that, man, once I inject this into my body, I become a new man. And they put off the old man that got them incarcerated in the first place, and then they buy in to the new man, and they accept the new man, and they become a God in training, and they come out of the prison ready to serve their people and not harm their people.
All praise is due to Allah, Brother Victor. And what I'm going to ask, while you pause, as you complete your statement, I want to make sure that I'm not going to step on your thoughts and your expression by assuming that you're finished talking. So if you could, give me an indication that you've finished, and then we can proceed with another question or see if there's someone waiting in queue to ask you a question or to make a statement regarding your statement. You did mention, however, Brother Victor, that you mentioned jobs or the lack thereof in the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan, but obviously that's only symptomatic of what is going on throughout the country, throughout America.
Yes,
the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan stated in his last installment of The Time of What Must Be Done, he said there were 2.3 million incarcerated in America. America tops the list of incarcerated civilians or incarcerated citizens. She tops the list globally. Now, with the unemployment, they announced that the unemployment countrywide is 17%. Certainly, it's greater than that in the black community, and I'm sure even greater in the state of Michigan, given those circumstances there. The people who are by and large incarcerated are black, Hispanic, and poor whites.
Yes, sir.
I want to ask you, with black people in particular representing 12% of the population countrywide and incarcerated people 70%, and that's black, Hispanic, and poor whites, but mostly black. Do you think this is as a result of the job losses, the outsourcing of manufacturing to other countries by the greedy, profit-minded corporate giants? And is this by design? Is it just economic happenstance as a result of economic downturn? Or is there a deeper conspiratorial motive behind all of this? I'd like you to expand on that there, brother, please.
Brother, it's not a conspiracy. It is an actual fact. The fact of the matter is less of the situation being the corporate greedy. It's actually being utilized by the people who fuel the prison industrial complex, and what they do is they lobby and they spend the millions and millions of dollars on the lobbying of legislation of criminal behavior. What they do is they so-called getting hard on crime, and they use fear as a way to push legislation through that requires our brothers and sisters to spend more time in prison. I'll give you some examples here in Michigan, especially. October 1st of 2012, they just passed what they call our four-strike law here in Michigan. And you've heard about the three-strike law is when you commit, let's say you commit gun crime, and then you get three strikes, and then you're mandated to prison 25 to life.
Yes,
but what
sir.
They did here in Michigan, while we were, like the minister said, snapping our fingers and shaking our behinds in the clubs and rapping and engaging in sport and play, they said what they call the Michigan four-strike rule, which just means instead of, in most cases, it's the same crime three times, and that's what gets you that case. In Michigan, they passed a law that stated four felonies of any kind. And let me show you an example. Let's say you've got a drug charge. That's one. Let's say you're driving while drunk. That's another one. Let's say you don't pay your child support. That's another one. and then you commit another crime of any felony, then you're going to jail 25 to life, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing is we don't keep our eye, and the people who represent us, the elected officials that represent us, are not arguing when these blatant displays of attacks against the youth. We also have what we call the Nathaniel Abraham Law. Nathaniel Abraham was a young man who, at the age of 11, shot and killed a person, and the big debate was whether to try him as an adult or as a juvenile. So they ended up electing to try him as a juvenile. He went to juvenile court. He got out at the age of 21, and he came out looking like a pimp. He had a pink fur on with a matching pink dogs, and he was just this everything wrong about the black male shown. They were placing bets. They found the prosecutors were placing bets on when he would return to prison. Within a year and a half of his being released from juvenile homes, he returned to prison. He is currently serving an 8-to-24-year bid for selling of methamphetamine. Now, here's the law that they passed. They passed a law that here in Michigan, from the age of 12 to 18, you can be tried as an adult and be held to an adult prison if you commit a felony. See, they put these laws into effect that are aimed at our children. Wrong place, wrong time. You also had the gangbuster law that said that if three or more people are together, they can be tried federally. And over like Michigan, we don't have the death penalty. If they commit one, if I'm with two other people and one of them commits a murder, federal government can take over, Department of Justice can take over the case under the gangbuster law and try us for the death penalty. They have aimed at our babies. They have aimed at our future, and they don't feel, they're not threatened by the ones they've already got. They're looking at our future and what our babies and our destiny is, and they have put legislation in place that is aimed specifically at our babies and our teenagers to make them become products of it. You mentioned, the minister said, that over 2.5 million people are incarcerated, but in all, there's 6.5 million that is under some sort of supervision. One of the things they do here in Michigan, when you get the tether, because of overcrowding, they give you the tether, but they charge you $120 a week for you being monitored by them by tether. So all of these things, so let's say you fall behind on your tether, then you go back to prison. So they put these legislations straight aimed at us without any flinching, and that's what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said. He said there is going to be a time when their wickedness, you won't even question it because it's going to be out in the open, and that's where they're at. They have aimed at our babies to incarcerate them and to put them under the prison industrial complex without once even flinching and expecting a backlash from the black community. That is a blatant display. It's not a conspiracy. It's a blatant display of their wickedness to try to undermine the future of the black community here in Detroit, of course, and across the country.
Yes, sir, Brother Victor. That's very enlightening and illuminating. Sister Gidget, were you successful in getting Brother Ali back?
Yes, sir. I believe he is back. Brother
yes,
Ali,
yes.
Are you there?
Assalamu alaikum. I'm on.
Wa alaikum salam. Brother Ali, were you able to hear the question as well as Brother Victor's response?
No, I did not. I just heard Brother Victor's response.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to extend on that there, brother, we'd like to bring you in on this conversation. I gave you a glowing introduction that you missed, brother. But all of it was true. All of it was true and not exaggerated. But we're very happy to have you here. But for the purposes of time, I can't repeat it, but you have the mic. So please, brother, weigh in on this most timely subject. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam, and I'm happy to be on your show, and I want to greet your listening audience as well as our brother, Student Minister Victor, who, of course, is the head of our Student Prison Reform Regional Representative here in the 7th Region, and, of course, to our brother, National Rep, Brother Student Minister Abdullah. I'm just delighted to be a part of the program and that the minister allowed us to wear the title of student, because that's where I'm actually coming from, studying the condition of our brothers and sisters on the inside of the prison walls. And what, like what Brother Victor was saying, is their planning for our youth to make us unuseful to the Most High God, who has come through the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to make us worthy to be saved. So they frame in laws to make mischief. At a program where they were mentioning there's a book that we all should get called Acres of Skin. This book talks about how the prison industrial complex is one of the financial engines of corporate America. And they're going to be expanding their frontier of incarcerating mainly our youth, but they're moving to just incarcerate uninformed human beings. There's a website you can go to called the Tavistock.org. Tavistock.org is a website that the CIA gives information about behavioral suggestions that they're working on. As we in the black community work on halfway house situations where we're preparing for our youth to come home from these prisons, they're trying to make them unusable in the society by pumping them up with psychotropic drugs so that when they come out, they can't perform as a normal citizen, and they go right back into the behavior that we hoped to reform them from by our ministry, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and others who are going in to help with our youth on the inside. So what Brother Victor is saying, we have to come with solutions to combat from all angles to make our youth serviceable to the community and our various religious institutions when they come home.
Brother James?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Brother Ali, we appreciate that information, brother. And to testify, of course, to what you and Brother Victor are saying, we know that the enemy must do what he must do. The situation looks bleak, but by the grace of Allah, there is one who is leading us into the resolution of these situations. And I'd like both of you to talk about the impact of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the message of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, which of course is one and the same, is having on those who are incarcerated. And why, if it is at all necessary, to make sure that the Nation of Islam prison reform program is instituted throughout America. So Brother Victor, if you'd like to weigh in on that.
Well, dear brother, the reason we get such opposition in going in prison is we're bad for business. Because once an inmate takes the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as taught to us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and they put those teachings into practice, they know that they're not coming back to prison. And then they lose a area of which they have used as a breeding ground for their slave labor. So the thing is they have to keep the teachings out of there, because it does no good to say, we're going to let y'all come in here, but we know that this whole group of brothers are not going to return back to prison, and I will not have my slaves anymore. Now, it's interesting. When I started in prison reform ministry over 10 years ago, in Michigan alone, we only had 1,700 people who professed Nation of Islam as their religious you have to sign in as your religious choice. We have over 5,000 now. And the thing is as we grow and grow and our influence grows and grows, then they start hampering and hindering us more and more. Now, in certain facilities I go in, they only let me talk to the Nation of Islam. They don't let me talk to general population anymore. But I'll use a perfect example of how the teachings have been accepted. Just last Friday, I was at Cooper Street Correctional Facility in Jackson, Michigan. And me and the chaplain there, we have a touchy relationship, but he was going to allow me to speak to the Nation of Islam study group. But the assistant deputy warden, who knew me from another facility, intervened, and when I arrived at the facility, he said, no, I want you to speak to general population. So by Allah's grace and mercy and the minister's good name, I was able to speak to over 220 inmates at that facility, speaking to them about the time and what must be done. And at the end of the session, I'm shaking the hands of the inmates, and there's three Caucasians that's there, you know, and I'm shaking their hands. And then as they walk by, the study group coordinator says, do you know who that is? And I wouldn't know. I said, no, I don't know who it is. He said, that was the Aryan Brotherhood. And they had came out to hear what your brother had to say. And I thought that was very interesting because we could stop things in prisons that they can't even stop with all their abusive tactics and punishments. But they know that there is only one religious group in any prison that has one person that is dictating how we behave all in every prison and all around the world. The Christians don't have it. The other religious organizations don't have it because they know that all of our instructions come from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And when he gives us the prison reform, student prison reform ministers, the instructions, we carry the instructions in there without deviation. So they know that they don't have rogue prison ministers from the Nation of Islam in any of the facilities. That the facilities are brothers that are in there, they're well-mannered, they're model citizens because they got the example from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who was the first prison reform minister of the Nation of Islam. When he went to Milan Correctional Facility, just 50 miles away from here in Milan, Michigan, he was there, and many times the warden and the officers would consult the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on prison affairs. And he did his time in Milan Correctional Facility and never created an issue, and many of the other followers of Master Farag Muhammad was there, not because they did anything wrong, but because they dared to think outside the white man's box. But he was a model prisoner, and he was respectful to those who had authority over him at that point in time, and he was always asked for advice, and he always lent his knowledge and expertise to the prison situation until he was released, and then those who came after him did the same thing. So the thing is that they know that we are bad for business, and that's why they put the roadblocks in front of us. That's why they fight against us. You have Wolf, the representative in New York, that is trying to get the Nation of Islam banned from prisons altogether, saying we're a terrorist group when there has never been any example of terrorism and or any misconduct outside of, you know, normal misconduct that a prisoner may get, but there hasn't been any riots or anything instituted by the Nation of Islam, but they tried to recognize us, and like I said, this guy, Peter King and Wolf, those are two guys' names, that they're trying to get legislation to ban us from going into prison. And the only reason why you want to do that is because you know we're bad for business and we're really messing up your money. And I just want to throw it out there real quick. The two leading groups that are looking to privatize prisons is a group called Correctional Corporation Association, and now it's called GEO Group, but it used to be called Wackenhut. Those two are the leading indicators, and what the minister said on the Time What Must Be Done last week when he said that they come and privatize this prison, but it's up to the state to keep that prison 90% full. If they do not give them 90% occupancy, then the state has to pay a cash dollar to these private prison holders in lieu of the prison. And that's what I said. That's why they're passing legislation, because to avoid that bill, they have to get more people to go to prison. And they see the private prisoners
from all around the state to make sure that they cover their debt of keeping it 90% full. Otherwise, they have to pay those two corporations, GEO Group and Correction Corporation, X amount of millions of dollars for failing to provide them with prisoners.
Thank you, Brother Victor. Brother Ali, would you like to extend on what Brother Minister Victor has just shared with us?
Yes, sir. To expand on what Brother Victor said, right here in the city of Tampa, we have social relations with the other Christian prison ministry that, although Islam here in the South gets a little more pressure than up north because we were a little stronger up north, but through our social relations with the community, with churches and otherwise, through the Coach Foundation that's headed by Reverend Willie Dixon, he has allowed us to go to a training facility in Polk County here in Central Florida last weekend, where I was able to get a PIN number that allowed me, where I was met with great opposition, to get into these facilities because they have the option of saying we already have Islam in these facilities, but it's of the immigrant Sunni Muslim persuasion, so they can use the excuse that we don't need another Muslim group on the inside. But to our social interaction and our making friendships in all walks of life, we were able to bypass that and be able to get a PIN number that we were able to get into any of the facilities in the state of Florida. So going forward, we will be able to continue to offer the teachings of the Most Honored Elijah Muhammad as taught by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to our brothers and sisters on the inside. Also, with the Coates Foundation, in conjunction with NOI Prison Reform, we're able to speak to the general population that deals with self-improvement topics. So through following and studying the minister's movement, we're able to talk to the general population in the same respect and glowing love that Brother Victor encountered. We're experiencing that same respect and admiration from the general population because of the way the minister has weaved the word in such a way that we can speak to any religious faith expression and not lose our faith as representatives of the teachings of the Most Honored Elijah Muhammad. But to go further and expand on how the corporations are working through, especially that corporation called Wackenhut, who's trying to purchase a federal prison, and they promised the state, if they keep it 90% full, certain political figures are trying to pass laws to allow them to come in. The Tavis stop.org website shows that these groups such as Black Ops, Blackwater, Wackenhut, these were the same groups that went into Iraq to help put secured the trucks that was going in, fixing the pipeline that was destroyed when America went into Iraq and produced shock and awe on the innocent Iraqi people, and the Iraqi government set their oil fields on fire. It was the Wackenhut Corporation, along with Black Ops and Blackwater, that went in and secured those engineers that went in and repaired those oil fields. Now, the Black Ops officers and the servicemen that are overseas fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, they come back with a certain itchy trigger finger mentality, and a lot of them are unloaded into the prisons to be correctional officers and also on the police forces that are infiltrating the gangs, some on the police side and some black brothers who are combat-minded, who can't get rid of that itchy trigger finger, join the gangs in the inner cities of the United States because they want that combat activity to continue in their life because they can't shut their brain off from being a person like that. So they join the gang war, and this fighting between police and the gang is further expanded and unloaded in our community where our innocent brothers and sisters are subject to this carnage that's going on in our community. And the brothers that we reach inside the prison, the greatest example I'm learning, family, is we as student ministers and laborers on the outside be a good example of what Minister Farrakhan is trying to promote, to be a doer of the word, because we can teach a good lecture on the inside with our brothers, but if we're not a model example of how to live our faith, that
excellent point.
Will destroy that inmate who knows the teachings because they're studying backwards and forwards. They read the Quran to the Quran creases in their cell. They know message to the black man. They know the supreme wisdom. But they don't know how to live the life of a Muslim because on the inside they're not tried like we are on the outside. So when they come all disciplined up from on the inside, they come out on the outside and they see the mosque loose and free for all. It is a travesty to the clean garment that they develop in terms of their character and their way of life, accepting the teachings on the inside, and they see us running the red lights of the restrictive law in the mosque, in the study group. So it really is disappointing to the brothers and the sisters when they come home. So the best that we can do is be social beings, create an atmosphere not only in the mosque and the study group, but creating a community and an activity that when they come home, they got something to give the 25 years they learned plumbing or carpentry or whatever they learned to make themselves a viable citizen. They can come in our community and be useful because we got the nine ministries. But what we do is hurt the brothers and sisters when they come home and we have nothing for them to do. For idle time is the devil's workshop.
And excellent points, Brother Ali. Go ahead, Brother Victor.
I just want to come in behind that as well. One thing that we can't take for granted either, there's enough crime and mischief behind the wall too. And one thing that I don't change the teachings because I'm in a prison. The teachings are the teachings. The restrictive law is the restrictive law, and they are held accountable to the same standard that we are accountable for out here. And that is when I start seeing the biggest transformation amongst the brothers is when you really let them realize, you know, because I always ask the question, I said, well, it's rhetorical. I said, how many of y'all believe God is on this side of the wall? And everybody wants to raise their hand. I said, then why does prison policy and prison protocol still exist? Look the other way. Mind your own business. Don't get involved with stuff that don't belong to you. I said, that doesn't sound like a savior. So I pushed them to be the moral standard behind the wall and that you can change the whole complexion of the prison institution by coming together under unity. I bring all the, whenever we have a Savior's Day or Holy Day of Atonement program in the prison, I bring all of the, our Moorish Science brothers, our Sunni and Shiite brothers, our Christians, I bring everyone together under the banner because why? The teaching of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is universal. So I bring everybody together and I start pushing brotherhood, unity. I take the power out of the hands of the prison and the warden and the COs and put it into the hands of the brothers that they can balance themselves. And then they start becoming
peer mentors to one another on what is right and wrong. I got a letter the other day because I went and set up with the Brotherhood a Brotherhood Council. Every religious organization has a member, and what they do is in these situations, they buy shoestrings, soap, different things that the inmate may use. So when a young man comes in there before the predators and the leeches can get hold of them, the Brotherhood take care of him. And I got a letter from a brother that was so beautiful. He and a brother, his bunkie, had a difference. And the bunkie, who wasn't at the Unity program, called him to the bathroom, which is where they go and work things out. So the brother said, I'm not going to fight you. Did you not hear what we agreed upon here? That we're not going to settle our differences with physical confrontation, you know? So when you can get them to open up to the consciousness of who they really are and their real being, they will start changing. The prison will start becoming just the trial that it is in their life. They'll get through that trial and they'll come out, like you said, ready to go. But the thing is this, you have to have a soft landing ground for them. And what you got to do is when they're coming out, I know when the brothers are coming home, and I know when to expect them. I give them my direct number. They call me directly. I make sure they get to their classes and things like that. And that is one of the reasons, by Allah's grace and mercy, I believe that here in Mosque Number 1, about 60% of the brothers here were formerly incarcerated. So they have no problem with coming from prison to the mosque. And we have to, like Ali said, we have to keep them busy, but heck, there's enough work. We haven't conquered this world yet. So there's plenty of work to be done. You just got to make sure that we embrace them and don't give them the same treatment they're going to get when they go to 25 job interviews and get turned down because they were formerly incarcerated. You know, and that adds, like you was talking about the unemployment rate earlier, Brother James, the thing behind it is this, many of our brothers who are incarcerated, they get tired of even getting turned down, so they just drop out. So that incarceration rate, you probably add 10 or 15 points to whatever unemployment rate you see in any city. And here in Detroit, it has been estimated that the black unemployment rate is 55% here. 55%, over half of the people that are countable are unemployed.
Well, Brother Victor, thank you. You are finished making your point. As I said, I don't want to interrupt you because of a misinterpreted pause.
And the other thing that I do want to add, when Brother Ali said Whacking Hut, see, Whacking Hut had some of the most atrocious prisons in history in terms of suicide, assaults, murders, rapes, and things like that. And they operated like this until roughly 2007, then they changed their name. So everyone who's associated with private prisons being held by Whacking Hut are looking for Whacking Hut, but they changed their name to Geo Group. So I just want to make sure that the listeners understand that Geo Group is really Whacking Hut. It used to be Whacking Hut. It used to be stocks held by George Bush and his family and many of them that were in the White House, neoconservatives. They are getting filthy rich. Bob Barker of Price is Right fame, and all of these people are getting rich on the backs of these prisons, private prison places. Correctional Corporation of America sent a letter to 48 of the governors of the continental United States and gave them a proposal to take over and subcontract their prison contracts, and then they would run it. And statistics have shown this is a multi-billion-dollar business. And many of the representatives are secretly signing. We have two bills right now, HB 5174 and HB 5177. You got to watch these guys. These guys are trying to slide bills in, like, rural areas of Michigan where the citizens of Detroit don't know what's going on. But they're trying to get these privatization of prisons back into the loop. What they've done here in Michigan, they've closed 18 prisons in the 10 years that I have been on the post, and what they're doing is they're just empty buildings right now. So they're looking to sell these privatization prisons, are trying to buy these buildings and open them up, and then, of course, then they go looking for their product. Their product is black men, Hispanics, And like you said, poor white people. So the thing is the product that they're farming, the product that they're marketing, and the actual corporate greed that's involved is in the trafficking of people. And it is legal by the 13th Amendment because that is the only way through incarceration that you can legally still be a slave in the United States of America.
Yes, sir, Brother Victor. Brother Ali, both of you make excellent illuminating points that, of course, I'm sure piques the interest and edifies us in terms of our need to know what is going on from the aspect of the work that both you and Ali and, of course, all of us in the ministry are mandated to perform. I thank Allah for our beloved brother and student minister, the 7th Region, Brother Rasul Muhammad, who mandates for all of us who are students and come under his tutelage to make the prison ministry a mandatory component of our ministerial practice. I thank Allah for him, and by the way, may Allah bless him and heal him and just correct whatever problems he's focusing on and hasten his return to us. We thank Allah for him. So I'd like at this time, dear brothers, you're giving us information that I'm sure all of us who are listening really appreciate and, again, are edified. But I'd like to call our sister Gidget into this conversation if she has a question or statement. And I'd also like to ask of her, is there anyone in queue that's waiting online or someone that's on the Internet line who's posed a question or comment that we'd like to have participate in this program? Sister Gidget?
Yes, sir. You have a house full of questions. So I guess we need to move quickly because it's a lot of questions, a lot of hands raised. So we're going to take the first call from area code 773. Your mic is live.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Walaikum
salam.
Alhamdulillah. My name is Abdul Malik Rahim Arkham. I'm a Sunni Muslim. I was in the Arizona State Prison Complex in Kingman, Arizona for 3.5 years. I also served as imam for the community out there in Arizona for 2.5 of those years.
Yes,
as imam, though, the hardest thing for me to do was to get the brothers who was accepting Islam and coming to the masjid, because we did have a masjid that we go to every Friday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, was to get them to align their wills with the Lord's will as it is in this Quran. And so I'll be doing a coup on a Friday about no gambling, because, you know, they do a lot of gambling. No lying, no stealing out of the kitchen. You know, no cigarettes, no drug sales and stuff like that on the yard. And then they'll be in the masjid on Friday, and then Friday afternoon they'll be out there doing just what I gave the coup against. And so when I took the imamship, the first thing the brother told me, he said, hey, Aki, you're going to have to be the example for them to emulate, because if you don't do what you're telling them to do on Friday, they're just going to take it in one ear and go out the other. And so I said, Alhamdulillah. And so the whole time I was in prison, no drugs, no alcohol, no lying, no stealing, no homosexuality, all of that nonsense that Muslims are not supposed to be doing. You put that thing on yourself, and then you walk out and show your adab or your example so these brothers can say, well, hey, this can be done. Why? Because that brother right there is doing it.
That's right, sir.
No excuse. And I'm like, I'm 5 feet, 150 pounds. And I'm on a yard with some gorillas. Ain't had one fight the whole time I was there, though. Alhamdulillah. Not one fight. And you know how the Muslim community is in the prisons. We separate. I got brothers that's going to the church. They're not trying to do Islam. They're still playing dominoes all day, playing chess all day, you know, gambling, lying, stealing, robbing, all the nonsense that they do all day. But my community, separate from that. So when y'all want to get in a fight, y'all go ahead and do y'all thing, but we ain't about none of that. And nine times out of ten, when y'all get ready to get into something, y'all going to come to us to broker the peace, because you know good and well that we don't need that nonsense up in here. So if anybody going to be talking some sense up in here, it's going to be us.
That's nine times
out of ten. And so when I got out of prison, I brought my Quran out of prison with me. I didn't leave it at the gate. I didn't leave it on the bus. I didn't leave it in Arizona. I brought it all the way back to Chicago. And I'm doing Dawah every day, all day, almost every day. I dress in full sunnah every day. People ask me every day, why you dress like that? Because this is how the clothes my father wore when he got off the ship as a slave in America. And so I went back to what he was dressing instead of what you dress in. And then that's the door to open them to Islam. They ask other questions, other questions. You're constantly inviting people to this deen, Siratul Mustaqim. You give that example, they start to emulate your example, and all of a sudden now they're not drinking. They're not smoking. They're not getting high. They're not fornicating. They're not lying. They're not stealing. Why? Because they're hanging with you. They can't say that I'm your friend and doing what I want to do around you. The hell if you do, because if you do that around me, you can't be my friend. Move around.
That's right.
Kick rock.
Go ahead, bro.
I ain't with that. You're not finna put that on me, because if I'm doing, if you're doing that, I might be end up doing that. And so the best thing for me to do is to let you go until you learn how to leave that alone. Matter of fact, I had a girl or a woman who I was messing with. All she did was drink and smoke weed. I love the heck out of her. I told her, baby, I gotta let you go. She said, why? Because you're doing all of that, and I ain't with that. You know,
yes,
as much as I love you, I gotta let you go. It's hard for me to let you go, but you gotta go. Unfortunately.
Yes,
but this deen, I understand what your brother's trying to do with the Nation of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
For me being a Sunni, all I impress on the brother is personal responsibility. Because if you want to jump off a John Hancock building, I might try to get you to stop doing it. But if you intent on doing it, let me know so I can get the heck out the way so you don't fall on me.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And
yes, sir.
You know, if the whole world around me want to fall down on his face, I'll have to be the Muslim just standing up at the end of the day. You know,
that's
why I try to tell the brothers, put this deen on. Put this deen on. Don't try to tailor it to you. Grow into it. You know what I'm saying? You can't pull this part up and pull that part up and tighten that up on the deen. No, you got to eat this deen. You got to swallow this deen. You got to drink this deen. You got to sleep this deen. And so you grow into this deen. And eventually, this deen will take over your whole body, your whole mind, your whole subconscious. Even my sleep, I'm dreaming about this deen. And so when I walk out on the street, guess what, brothers? Abdul Malik, assalamu alaikum. What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? What's about this? What's about that? Well, I can give you those answers because that's what I do. You know, this is like not a job. This is my life. You know,
that's
I'm I'm pressing this on my sisters and on my brothers. You know, and if they want to do it, fine. But they will find out the repercussions of their actions from not doing it, because 9 times out of 10 what's going to happen is they'll find themselves sitting in Cook County Jail because they got caught with bad weed in their pocket. You know, but they find themselves going back to prison, like your brother said earlier, doing that recidivism. You want to do the things that you did to get back in there because you can't find nothing to do out here? You need to get yourself about some business and practicing this deen. Because if Allah is going to, you, if you, Allah is going to ask you to serve Him, He's going to give you something to do to survive.
That's
you know,
right.
When I came home, I walked into Chicago, sat on my front porch, watched brothers sit across the street from me smoking blunts and drinking 40s. And the Mexicans walking down my street, cutting every yard on the yard, on the block. Every yard on the block. I asked the brother, I said, what y'all doing, man? Y'all letting people take money and food out y'all pocket while y'all sitting around smoking blunts and drinking 40s? Oh, man, we ain't finna do that. We ain't got time for that. All right. So I went in my garage. I got 2 lawnmowers back there, a doggone blower and an edge trimmer. I went upstairs, got on my computer, made me a doggone flyer, 300 of them, passed them out like the mailman. Before I even got back to my house, my phone was ringing. Now
yes,
I got like 30 customers that I do yards for every doggone week, and this is on Southside Chicago. And that is expanding into doing gutters. That is expanding into doing the snow. That is expanding into raking the leaves. That is expanding into laying turf. That is expanding into laying flowers. So it's year-round. So I don't never have to go out and put an application in for Walgreens or Walmart or Jules or Oscar or nobody. I do me.
Yes,
I'm not depending on that European to feed me. Allah is going to give you what you need to survive if you're practicing His deen. He's not going to let you starve. All you got to do
that's
is the right thing. All you got to do
that's
is the right thing.
That's right.
Brother, Abdul Malik, listen, your words are very inspiring, brother, and I thank you so much for calling in. All praise is due to Allah. I'd like to give the others that are waiting in queue an opportunity to ask questions. And Brother Victor and Brother Ali, I'm sure you have something to say as a result of the wonderful expression of our beloved brother Abdul Malik. But I'm gonna ask if you will just respond to the questions, because we have a time constraint. So
James?
Yes, sir.
I just want to respond to the brother to let him know that we stand with you, although you say you are Sunni Muslim.
the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has unleashed a department of the Nation of Islam called the Imami Department. And our first Imam of the Nation of Islam is the great-grandson of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. His name is Brother Sultan Rahman. And if you get the latest edition of the Muslim Journal, you will see Brother Sultan Rahman in assemblies with an assembly of other imams from around the United States. So the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has met the response of the wider Muslim community to show them that we are trying to speak the same language, that we may find brotherhood with each other. Brother Sultan Rahman has a website called the Table Talk of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but he's the imam of our headquartered flagship mosque right there in Chicago. And I just brought that up to let you know, brother, that we're trying to bring the family together. And Brother Imam Sultan Rahman is a good Muslim brother, showing you that we are practicing the teachings of Islam according to Prophet Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, my brother.
Thank you, Brother Ali. A wonderful reminder and point, dear brother. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you both. At this time, Sister Gidget, can we go to the next one in queue?
Yes, sir. Area code 203. Your mic is live. Area code 203. Area code 203. Going once, going twice. Okay, maybe they changed their mind. Area code 314. Your mic is live.
As-salamu alaykum.
Walaikum salam. Walaikum salam, Brother Kareem.
Yes, yes. Well, as always, in the name of Allah, who came in the person of Master Farah Muhammad, I just want to once again thank you, Queen Aziza. Thank you, Brother Minister James Muhammad. Thank you, Brother Victor. Thank you, Brother Ali. This is, again, right on point. This is one of the vital issues that we have to have. I mean, I'm not going to take up too much time because you all are right on point. I just wanted to share the fact that exactly what's going on today is a blessing to me, because I remember when I spent my time going through the prison industrial complex.
Come on.
Both federal and state.
Mm-hmm.
I literally had to fight myself just to have the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
That's right.
In the state prison, there was no prison for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Everybody else was there, but as far as the messenger's teachings, they felt they had killed it, and they were happy.
When I got there,
I had to literally reintroduce the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The thing is, though, one of the things I'm so glad that Allah has done, he's placed this emphasis on it now through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and through you brothers.
That's right.
And whatever sisters are involved, that now it's not like that. See, because, I mean, it's a shame to say it, I got no support from the local administration. There was one brother who made sure I got all the messengers' books. He made sure I had Quran, and he made sure I kept at least 12 final calls every time they came out.
That's right.
And the last thing I wanted to say on that is, when the brother mentioned the members of the Aryan Brotherhood, when I was in Leavenworth, the imam there was so adamant, and I'm not saying this against all the men, I'm just saying that particular individual, he was so adamant against the minister that he was determined to get me to come into his camp, not understanding that I'm a Muslim already.
That's right.
The Sunnah for the Prophet. You can't be a follower of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad truly and not practice the Sunnah of the Prophet.
Go ahead.
if you understand, because number one, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for years talked about the fact that the Muhammad of Quran is a black man. That's he right. made a distinction in 1972 when he said that Prophet Muhammad of 1400 years ago, he is a white man, so that we would understand that he was talking about himself. And dare I say now today, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that was up a subject for a different time. The thing is that when this man brought me in, he brought that particular Friday Jumu'ah, he had the two leaders of the Aryan Brotherhood who were there at the prison at that time. And when he got through with his khutbah, and at the end, he brought him up and introduced me to the members of the Aryan Brotherhood and said, see, here's somebody who can probably tell you more about Farrakhan than you already know. Well, the two leaders of the Aryan Brotherhood looked at him and said, well, this is where we get our information from. And I'm saying that to say that continue on. I'm going to shut up because Allah is blessing me to see the day that one of the days that I prayed to see it come, that we are conquering. We're not going to conquer. We are conquering because
that's
there are
right.
individuals
that's right.
who
that's
are
right.
doing what I live to do, which is practical application of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Thank you for
come
letting
on.
Me take up your time. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam. And thank you, Brother Kareem. Always a wonderful contribution when you come in and make your statement or ask a question. Always a wonderful contribution, dear brother. We thank Allah for you. And the time with us is just running away. Let's get to the next question, as such as there be, Sister Gidget.
Okay, area code 404, your mic is live. Area code 404. Area code 404. Going once, going twice. Okay, maybe they changed their minds. Okay, let's go with area code 586. Area code 586, your mic is live.
Assalamualaikum. Waalaikumsalam.
That's Michigan.
Yes, sir, it is. sister, I just want to tell you thank you. The last two nights you have had some awesome programs. And the reason I called in was when I saw that Brother Victor was on. My husband currently is incarcerated in Michigan. He wasn't my husband, until we've been together a little over 2 years. And I have to say, before I met him, I was real hypocritical about any sisters, corresponding or anything with any brothers that were incarcerated. I had a really closed mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had to eat those words.
Praise
because
Allah.
I must say, Brother Victor, praise be to Allah, Master Farah Muhammad. You are doing an awesome job with keeping these brothers on point, making
all
them stay on their duty. I could not have found a better brother. I thank Allah for him. I thank him for you for keeping them on the right path. They know that there are consequences and repercussions if they don't do right behind those walls. They're not just there and able to do whatever and say that they're in the Nation of Islam. It don't work that way.
That's right.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't work that way.
Yes,
and so I just
praise
wanted to tell the brother, I wanted to say thank you and to let him know that he's really doing an awesome job. And I thank a lot for my husband because
yes.
I spent a lot of years with a brother that I thought I knew oh so well. I didn't. And now Allah has blessed me with this time to get to know him.
Praise Allah.
And like
sister,
I said,
what's your name?
I'm
what's your name, sis? Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sis. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And I just want you to know that this is a brother who, when I feel myself falling off my deen, he helped me pull me back up. Every morning, we don't just waste our calls. Every morning, my phone is ringing. As soon as the phone turn on there, it's prayer time.
Yes.
He's suited and booted and ready for prayer. So I just don't want... I just want to kind of change the perspective that I had at one time and maybe someone else can see that it's really some great brothers in there. I heard the messenger say one time, if the brothers kept on, he was going to go back to the prison to get him some of those good ministers out of there. You know, I was listening to Newark, New Jersey the other day, and he said, you won't go into a federal prison, a state prison, and not find one of Elijah's. I just want you to know that these brothers, I don't know about all, because like he said, you can tell the brothers that's not coming home and planning on going to the mosque. He said they stand out, but you got some really good brothers in there. And I thank Allah, and I thank Allah for you, Brother Victor. You know, I don't know you personally, but he speaks very highly of you. And one thing they know, if those brothers are out of order in there, they report those nuisances on their post, and it's going to be taken care of.
That's
so
crazy.
I thank Allah, and
thank you,
like I said, I just wanted to call in and say that, and I don't want to take up too much time because I know time is, you know, of an essence. So I'll give you the greetings of Assalamu Alaikum.
Walaikum salam, sis.
Walaikum
salam.
Salam,
queen.
What a magnificent testimony. All praise is due to Allah. Go right ahead, Brother Victor, and then we want to go. We want to give as many as possible an opportunity to participate who are online, either on the phone or via internet. Go ahead, Brother Victor.
I just want to elaborate on what sister was saying. See, it's beautiful how she said, I had thought. But when Allah picks someone for you, you can't determine how that turns out. Now, here's one thing about brothers in prison. You don't have to convince them that the white man is the devil.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we lose a job, get laid off, whatever, the white man is the devil. We get hired back, he ain't so bad no more. But they get to see the worst of the devil because there are masochistic guards in there who enjoy torture and enjoy watching these brothers suffer, enjoy putting our brothers through hell. For, like brother said, just because they want to call themselves Muslim followers of the Honorable Elijah.
Yes, sir.
So they don't even second guess. They don't question. They come out prepared, knowing who the devil is, and they also know who God is. So
the thing is,
we can't be judgmental like the devil and start judging on who God has chose for us. Because the thing is this, when you stop choosing, I remember a great man, Brother James, you might even know this man. He said on a marriage conference call one time that the variables are the men in certain women's life, but the one constant is her when they're saying that they can't get a relationship.
That sounds familiar, brother.
Yes,
that sounds like a great, that sounds like a profound statement. I wonder who made that.
I know a brother with the initial James Muhammad. Said that.
The thing is,
I'm seeing that, and there are brothers that, and I tell the brothers this, and sisters can bear witness. I tell them, don't be playing games with Allah's property. Don't be falling trying to get some money on your books or this, that, and another. I said, if you're going to talk to a woman of God, you better be up front, or you best just walk away. Because this time of reckoning is upon us. So don't play games with Allah's woman. So if you want to be the right man, be the right man. And then you pursue an insistence, it's a give or take, you know. But like I said, you know, the beauty is the sister said she got past what she wanted and let Allah do the work. And all praise is due to Allah.
All praise is due to Allah. Brothers and sisters, I know there's a great deal of information that we're absorbing by being blessed with the presence of both our brothers, Ali and Brother Victor Muhammad. I want to focus in the remaining time on solutions. We're going to take one more question from the queue, and then I want to ask a few questions that focus on solutions and the wonderful reforming and transforming work and teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So, Sister Gidget, is there someone else online?
Going off the internet, a brother
who calls himself Master Farah Muhammad, wanted to share that the Prison Ministry Department gives free books written by the messenger, and that for the ministers, they can share this information with inmates. It is called the Shabazz Resource Center. And mm-hmm. I have the address and the phone number, and the brother to contact is Brother Khalid Hatim Shabazz. So I'm just going to give it out one time over the mic now, and I will post it on my page, and I will also share that information with Brother Ali and Brother Victor so that they can have it. But it's the Shabazz Resource Center, P.O. Box 161, New Haven, Connecticut. Zip code 06513. And for those of you who want to call, that number is area code 203-891-7072. And the contact person's name is Brother Khalid Shabazz. And like I said, I will pass this information on to all the social networks, and also I will pass the information to Brother Ali as well as Brother Student Minister Victor so that they can have it at their disposal for anyone who may be interested in getting some of the messengers' books that they have available there at the Shabazz Resource Center. And that is it for now.
Excellent. And thank you, Brother Khalid, for your great generosity in this great mission of the resurrection of the dead. Thank you, brother. May Allah continue to bless you. Now, Brother Victor, Brother Ali, as a result of the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for the Million Family March, and of course that was October 16, 2000, in Washington, D.C., the current draft of the National Agenda, Public Policy Issues, Analyses, and Programmatic Plan of Action from 2000 to 2008. This book reflects the broadening of outreach to be inclusive of the entire human family. And in that book, on page 40, dealing with prison reform, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and others involved in this work list 8 bullet points, which actually are goals. I want to go through these goals and ask if you and Brother Ali would expound on each one very briefly to try to encompass as many of them as possible. The first of which was to provide incarcerated persons with an avenue for community participation and support. And I'll add another, again, in consideration of time, to raise the cultural and political consciousness of the incarcerated. So, Brother Victor, Brother Ali, however you wish to divide that up, we want to hear from you, both of you. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, I want to go with the raising the cultural and political consciousness first.
Excellent.
What is happening, as I see myself going to these prisons, is that the face of the incarcerated is getting younger and younger and younger. They're less educated, and they're definitely disenfranchised from any cultural, spiritual foundations that normally the black community embraces. They are, as the minister has described, like dust being blown from this way to that way. The young men are products of broken homes. They don't have any balance in their lives that stops them from being prey by those who exact crime in our community. So the young men come there with no knowledge of self, no knowledge of religion, no knowledge of history. They know Jesus, but they might not know a Moses. There's no, and they, you know, have, I even asked this question 2 weeks ago in the mentoring program I did when I was addressing some of the things that were out there, some of the, like the
Lil Wayne's statement about Emmett Till. I wanted to get them to understand on why that was so egregious. They didn't know who Emmett Till was. And then they really couldn't even believe me when I told them, I showed them his picture, and I saw him, showed them a picture of him in the casket, and I told them why he was murdered. They looked at me with such disbelief, they could not even imagine that people would do that for whistling at a white woman.
Mm-hmm. Come on, baby.
And because they're so, and then I started speaking on slavery. So I said, well, how long did slavery last? Are you aware of that? I got answers from the amount of 25 years to 75 years was the highest end. 25 was the lowest. They are purposely not teaching them the conduit of their past. And like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, history best rewards our research. So they don't know their past. Therefore, they're a victim of their present, and therefore someone else predicts their future. So they occupy prisons at an alarming rate. Like I said, it looks like going to a junior high school. The faces are younger, and we have to reach out to them. See, there was a time in about 2004 to 2006 where all of the federal dollars was going to reentry programs. So all the churches and everybody was running out having prison reform ministry. The money dried up around 2006, 2007. Now everybody has abandoned that. The Nation of Islam, we didn't receive that money. We were not paid to go where we go. We've been in the prisons when it wasn't popular, when it was popular, and we're in there now when it's not popular. The thing is we have to be the carriers of culture to the inmate so he can connect to his great past, which did not begin at slavery, and be reacquainted with his natural self and his natural God, his natural belief system, his language, his culture, his God, so that he can grow into the God that created him and be of service to his people and not a scourge his people. They know if I control your thoughts, I can control your actions, and in controlling your actions, I can use you, as the lessons say, as a tool and a slave, so that you become a herder of your people and not a helper of your people. So the thing is we got to get them culturally bound. And as for political aspirations, we got to get them voter educated before we get them voter registered. We're in the middle of a big, big time here in Detroit. We are under emergency financial manager here in Detroit. And for the first time in the history of Detroit, there's a white man who is one of the forefront to be mayor of the city of Detroit. Now, this man has done his homework, and he knows that the black people, they have taken our brother Kwame and put him in prison. He's looking at 20-some-odd years of prison. They've taken the power out of the city council, out of the mayor's hands, and they have shown us a big helping dose of you black people can't run nothing. So the uneducated voter says, well, you're right, we can't. Look at all the black leaders that's going to jail and this and another. And, yeah, it's time for a white man to be the mayor. But the thing is if they were listening to Farrakhan when he said that there was an assault on all black leadership.
Right.
And they will be able to ascertain that it is not by happenstance that the last 4 years you have spent that time incarcerating the political leaders that we picked, and now you have an emergency manager who has threw the black vote out the window, and he dictates to the city of Detroit, picked by a white Republican governor, to be the one who overrides the votes. And here's what's happening in Michigan. There are, I believe, once we came under as financial manager, 65% of the black population in the state of Michigan is under emergency financial manager. So the black vote, the people that we voted in, and our own brother in Benton Harbor, Brother Marcus, was elected as a city council person, and they put emergency financial manager in, took the power out of their hands. Wherever there's mass population of black, they have put an emergency financial manager here in Detroit and in Michigan. So the political consciousness has to make sure that the people that we pick to represent us are having our best interests at heart. They're not at the back door of our slave master cutting a side deal. at the behest of what they said they would do for you and I. So we have to bring that consciousness up and make sure that the ones that we put in power represent us. And that comes with the raising of the cultural, the raising of our self-esteem. Once you get the culture, you're going to raise the self-esteem, and you won't just fly by night and say, yeah, this white guy's here, so let's vote for him because the black one failed in the past. You got to look at why the black one failed. You took the economic base out of Detroit and out of every major black city. You take the economic base out. You take the tax base out. You have the market, the housing market collapse, and then you increase unemployment between 30 and 40%. It's all destined for socioeconomic failure.
Very illuminating, Brother Victor. Thank you so much, dear brother. Brother Ali.
Yes, I would only add that we're going to be making a stronger push to make the mosque, the church, and the community more concerned about their loved ones that are incarcerated. What I learned from the workshop this Savior's Day that was headed by Student Minister Abdullah was one of his panelists said that black people have a habit of when their loved ones are incarcerated, they have this forget about them mentality because they feel, I didn't send you to jail, then I ain't going to come visit you in jail. Mostly we have to get rid of that because we have to recognize, especially community leaders, the student ministers at the mosque, the study group coordinators, the pastors in the community and the community activists, we have to bring them to recognizing that because of the large numbers of our population being incarcerated by the prison industrial complex, we have to see the reality of human resources. They still are a resource to our community if we tie our relationships to the activities of the community. We can still benefit from our brothers who are incarcerated as a resource and a commodity to help our community. So that starts with us, especially as followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who teaches us that Allah tells us in the Holy Quran that we are social beings. We have to learn to be social, to create an atmosphere that wherever our people are, we should be responding to them, especially when they're incarcerated. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who started the student ministry of prison reform, they continue to take letters and respond to the letters of the loved ones that are behind the wall. They, like the sister said of Brother Victor, he keeps a response going and communication going with the brothers on the inside and the loved ones responding back to our brothers and sisters that are incarcerated. Remember, we are the legal and lawful captives.
Teach, Brother Ali.
Because we are victims of the circumstance and the environment that the enemy was allowed to place us in. But that's not our nature. So we're going to have to push harder for this ministry to even be respected, because some of our, like Brother Kareem was saying, that some of the student ministers, they don't even respond to the student ministry as a respect, prison ministry as a respected ministry. Brother Victor has been working for a long time, and he's hard-pressed to get the necessary attention. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan had to cut off these rogue representatives that are in the prisons teaching their Islam. No, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad have experience in working with our brothers and sisters that are incarcerated. And on the back page of what the Muslims want, we want what the Muslims want, says the fifth want, is that we want our believers of Islam to be freed from the federal prisons who are held as prisoners in the innumerable prisons throughout the United States. So we have to respond to our brothers and sisters. Don't condemn them. Send them some money on their their books inside there. Donald Elijah Muhammad did that with Malcolm. And we need to show them that we don't condemn you. We don't care about the poor part. We only care about the best part of what they can be. So society failed them. 80% of our homes are headed by females. So there is no father to teach black men how to be a black man. And
come on, Ali.
Muslim inmates. We have to cross the line and get to our Christian family, our Sunni Muslim family, because the Nation of Islam's program is the only program at the end of the day that will show it's the best and only solution for the uplift of our people first, then humanity. So our charge in the student ministry is to put on programs and make the community ties by being more communicative and responsive to the brothers and sisters that are inside the prison and use their resources from where they are to help us in the community so that they're connected, so that when they come home, it's not as if they have to catch up. They're still involved.
Excellent, excellent. Very illuminating, brother. Very, very, very much so, Brother Ali. And for one who knows your work in the communities and doing that which you are actually expressing, I want to thank Allah for you, brother, and encourage you to keep up the good work, the great work, both of you. In fact, about it, both of you had addressed the third goal that stated in this list of eight. It is to prevent incarcerated inmates from being abused or lost in the system as a result of their own actions or as a result of government neglect or misconduct. So I'll move right along into the fourth and fifth point. We may not be able to cover them all, but they're so, so relevant and applicable to the time and what must be done as it relates to your aspect of ministry. The fourth one is, to this end, the Prison Outreach Initiative seeks to match incarcerated persons with people on the outside who will, number one, visit the incarcerated sister or brother regularly, number two, send correspondence to the incarcerated sister or brother regularly, three, provide the incarcerated sister or brother with reading materials, and four, raise small amounts of money for the incarcerated sister's or brother's canteen account. Brother Victor, Brother Ali, if you'd like to address our progress thus far in those categories of goals.
Brother James, right. the one thing that, like you were saying, the preventative abuse and also the system, and I know what I want to say, it's not that we're not doing it. It's just that we don't have enough people doing it. We, you know, when you think that there's 2.2 million and over 60% of them, almost 60% are black and people of color. So you've got almost 1.5 million people. And if we have 100, we're definitely underservicing them. There just needs to be more involvement, more people answering correspondence, more people sending reading material, more finances going into, and especially in the abused part. Because in October of 2012, I can't remember what they called themselves, they exonerated the 300th person based on DNA evidence for being wrongfully convicted. And at the Savior's Day program, there's the brothers, and I know them, brothers Johnny Savory, Brother Banks, Brother Davis, all of them were wrongfully convicted.
Right.
Now, if you can say that 300 have been freed based on DNA evidence, you cannot pinpoint how many people are languishing in prison, like our brother Troy Davis, may Allah be pleased with him, who was murdered in execution in the state of Georgia
innocent. Mm-hmm. We have a brother in Brother Reggie Clemens in St. Louis right now who is getting railroaded the same way as Troy Davis. You have all of you have 300 that have been freed based on DNA evidence. How many are there that were prosecutory misconduct, police misconduct, hiding of evidence, conjuring up of evidence? How many people over the course of our sojourn here in America has been convicted and they're innocent? Now, the thing behind that is this. Brother Davis said at the program, DNA exonerated him in 2006. He just got released in 2012. DNA proved he did not rape. The semen was not his, and he didn't rape and murder this young child. There was no DNA evidence. They found out who the DNA belonged to, but it still took 6 years for him to get out of prison. And I hear time and time again of our brothers who are wrongfully convicted or things like that. You don't hear a whole bunch of the enemy people wrongfully convicted. Now, I'm going to hit you with some stats that's going to kind of trip you out as it pertains to death penalty crimes.
Yes, sir.
And death penalty. The five top crimes committed that resulted in death penalty in the United States of America, number one, murder. Number two, rape. Now, number three is going to blow you away. Slave revolt.
Mm.
And the five occupations that of people who have been executed from 1608 to 2008, the number one occupation of people executed in America has been slaves. We still are in a slave mentality wherein it's still, they want to convince you that things have changed, but when slave is still the number one occupation of Americans executed, and 50%, over 50% of the people executed are black, and we constitute 13% of the population. The thing is there is a jurisprudence abuse against people of color. We know that. It has not changed. White people are amazed when you say that you've been racially profiled. What do you mean? The thing is there's so many factors involved for the abuse of a black inmate. And the thing is this, no one cares about the black inmate. Who's going to be the voice of the black inmate but the messenger of Allah and his servants and Allah himself? Because this world wants to lock them up and throw away the key. And we don't care about the incarcerated. We don't want them returning back. We want them to rot in prison. But the thing is it's only until we, the saviors of God, go in and take our brothers, put them on our shoulders like you would anybody you're trying to lift up, not look down at them, get under them to lift them up so that they can come in oneness with the God that they have been created. Because many of them, they're not in prison because they're guilty. They're in prison because they're poor and couldn't get proper representation. They got a state-appointed attorney, a court-appointed attorney who has files from the floor to the ceiling who's not going to try to represent them. And you know why we go to prison so much? The number one thing that court-appointed attorney is going to tell you to do is plea bargain. See, if you fight them, you get a longer sentence. It's called a penalty in sentencing. So if I come to you and I say, Brother James, you know, I can get you 3 to 5 if you go and plea bargain. But if you fight them, you're going to get 15 to 20. Can you do 3 to 5 and be out in a few years, or do you want to risk 15 to 20? And most of the brothers take the plea bargain. That's why they end up in prison. It's not because they're guilty.
Yes, sir. Hence, Brother Victor, the name, not public defender, but public pretender.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
How many people are going to beat their boss? The court is paying them. I ain't going to beat my boss and mess up my check. So I'm going to go in there and say, you know what? I don't want to mess up this check, so I'm going to get him the plea bargain 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what it is. They're abused back there, and then the brother was so right. You will be abused for your belief system. How can an Aryan nation be in there? How can they have Wiccans, which are witch doctors and devil worships, in there as recognized religions? And the brother who wants to worship Islam, as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he gets thrown in the hole. We get, and here in Michigan, we have what we call STG, which is Security Threat Group. The Nation of Islam is a security threat group in the prisons of Michigan. When you've got the Aryan Nation, the Aryan Brotherhood, witch doctors, devil worshippers, and all that in there, and you say, we're a threat to security. No, we're a threat to the security of your wallet and your bank account. Because when they embrace the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, you will no longer have a slave or a tool to play with.
That's absolutely right, dear brother. Thank you, Brother Victor, for your impassioned expression and exposition of these facts, dear brother. We greatly appreciate it and are moved by it. Brother Ali?
Yes, the only thing I would add is that we have to remember that the ball is in our court. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is teaching the world about our teachers. We now have to line up and be the solution that the program is promoting. If in every major city, if the community see us, not in the mosque only, but we're in the community, there's the worship
right.
of the community. And the problem of our incarcerated youth is as a result of us not being there to get our young people before they end up behind those walls, for them to be open to being guinea pigs, they're being fed psychotropic medication to make them disabled. So it's working on our community strongly, and our family already has been broken apart. And I'll take a page from history to remind all of us in our research, you will find that when the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was arrested in 1942 for not going to fight because America was prosecuting a war with Japan, when they arrested him in the interrogation room, they told him, if you was teaching what you was teaching 20 years earlier, we would have shot you outright. But because you are on time,
come on, beloved,
we are only arresting you because the president don't want you on the street, Elijah, teaching your people the proper use of themselves, because we need your people to help fight this war with Japan. But when he was released in 1946, he said, they said, go ahead and teach what you was teaching. No one will bother you, for they know that this word must be taught to your people. So we have it in the history that we just need to just do the word, not just teach and preach the word, but it's time to make the word flesh. The minister created the atmosphere and the environment for us to walk a little better now with teaching the truth. But the reward is to those who are steadfast and who are patient and are doing this work. So the work is enough work out there for us to do. It's not just those who are in prison reform. It's the judicial ministry. It's the ministry of agriculture. It's the the 10th ministry. It's all the 9 ministries. We must put them in display to our people so that they can see that preparation for their resurrection has already been figured out for them. So we just need to do it.
Well, let me add this, Brother James, on that. One thing is we have to be a preventive prison ministry as well. You know, once the brothers are incarcerated, some of them have got life sentences or whatnot, or long sentences. You know, you still got to teach them, but you have to get them before they go. And that's why I went to the schools. I'm in 3 of the quote-unquote worst high schools here in Detroit that I do a mentorship in there with the at-risk students.
Gotcha.
And I work with them before they get there. And today, matter of fact, this morning, once a month, I have a program with Ryan Correctional Facility here in Detroit where I take at-risk students and they work with a panel of 10 brothers who are incarcerated, and between the 10, they've served almost 300 years of incarcerated time. And they give them, it's not scared straight, you don't have them foaming at the mouth and ticking over tables. They give them the tools to critically think when they're at that crossroad of making a decision. And that program, I've taken over 80, after today, like 90 students. I've only lost two to the judicial system of the almost 90 students I've taken through this. Because these brothers give them the real truth, not that watered-down Rick Ross, Lil Wayne crap. They really get the real truth of what prison life is. And it's a wake-up call. And like I explained to them, you have the valley of decision. You have to make a decision on which way you want to go. But you will not be able to say that a warner didn't come to you and tell you, here's what your choices are. This is what it looks like when someone who's supposed to be your friend acts like your enemy, and he's the frenemy. He looks like a friend, but he's actually your enemy. Or when you're at the ports, when they said, hold these drugs, or hold this gun, or we riding dirtier, or this or another, you have a choice to make. But you will not say that you haven't been given the tools. And I tell you, brother, it is a very successful program. But the thing is that is catching them before they go, you know. And then I also take some peer mentors in there as well, the positive students, so that they can be mentor coaches to the other people in the school as well. So we have to get more involved in the school. You know, we have to get involved in middle school. We even have to get involved with grammar school. We
yes,
have
sir.
To be there in the most informative years of their life and stop letting the enemy form their minds into thinking that it's okay because everybody in my family went to prison, I'm supposed to go to prison. You know, and I heard that from a confession today from a brother. He said they've been dealing drugs in his family since the 60s. And he says, I'm going to change the destiny of my family. You know, and he said he's going to go to school. He's going to, you know, and when you hear that, I get so full because I know, I wish, you know, and I got to tell your callers, I ain't no saint. I wasn't no saint growing up. I wish someone talked to me when I was growing up. I wish I didn't have to go through some of the things I had to go through in my life, you know, growing up in Chicago, gangbanging in Chicago, dealing drugs in Chicago. I wish I didn't have to go through that, you know. But the thing is we are there. We have the proper tools. And what I do to these schools, I go to the principal and say, give me your worst student. Give me the student that you don't even want in your school, and I guarantee you I'm going to change them. And I'm going to tell you what the secret is. It ain't because Brother Victor's so smart, but I teach them this great, great teaching called self-improvement, the basis of community development.
And they
come to me and they say, what have you done to change them? I said, it ain't what I've done. It's what Farrakhan has done.
That's right.
Because that tool alone, in the hands of our students, in the hands of our family and our community, we can change their destiny. The white man has taken care of them and got them on his destiny, but we can reroute their destiny. And like the brother said, we've got to be in the community, at the youth centers, at the YMCAs, teaching this great teaching. We got to make sure every nook and cranny has Farrakhan teaching in it so that our people cannot go on in life and not say that they have not been given this great teaching that we have had change our lives. So we have to change the life that we owe, and we got to pay it forward.
Allahu Akbar. Very beautiful, brother. Yes, sir. As we're moving into, we got to leave a few minutes for announcements. Brother Ali, go ahead. You got a couple of minutes there, brother. Go right ahead.
Word antidote so that we can have the Mizan present for your listening orders or audience. We do know this, though, that we are taught in our prayer that our life, our prayer and our sacrifice, our life and our death is all for Allah. As the minister said, one day the enemy may outlaw our brand of Islam, and we may go to prison for teaching the truth. But
yes,
we do know that we are not expunged, or we're not to think that we won't go to prison because of we doing the right thing according to Allah's mind. because remember, they turned the truth of God into a lie, and all the messengers of God suffered for the truth. But we're not told that we may not go to prison for teaching the truth. So I also make that known to our young men, because a lot of them, we decide to say, stay out of jail, don't get in trouble. But Martin Luther King went to jail. Paul
That's right.
went to jail. The righteous suffered for the truth that they taught. I just wanted to add a little balance that we don't teach our children to be afraid to go to jail, because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said if you was born under this enemy in America, you was born in jail.
Excellent point, Brother Ali. To close out on, I want to thank you, Brother Student Minister Ali Muhammad of the Prison Reform Ministry of the Nation of Islam. I want to thank you, Brother Student Minister Victor Muhammad of the Prison Reform Ministry of the Nation of Islam. I am sure that our listening audience was edified, inspired, educated, and we are very, very happy to have you. And there's an aspect of the prison ministry under political prisoners that we just have to take time to discuss, which means it begs a part two of this particular subject matter. So all praise is due to Allah. I want to encourage all of our listeners, our participants online via internet and the telephone. Tomorrow is the 17th installment of the lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and I believe it's 3 o'clock Pacific Time. Go to NOI.org. Click on The Time and What Must Be Done. We want to also encourage you, dear listening and participating family, if these programs offer to you some inspiration, edification, positive direction under the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we ask you to tune in next week. Call a friend or a family member. Have them listen in and participate on this show. I want to thank you, listening audience, participating audience, for your week-to-week support of this show and others that are supervised by our beloved sister, Sister Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, also known as Gidget Muhammad. And I thank Great you for allowing me to be a host in this movement. I would say movement. It's a program, but it's a movement. Thank you.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to also thank our beloved brother and student regional representative, Brother Minister Rasul Hakim Muhammad, for the wonderful opportunity in the ministry that he has extended to all of us who you hear speaking tonight and hosting tonight. We thank Allah for him, and we pray Allah for speedy restoration to full and complete health and a speedy return to us.
That's right.
And
that's
so,
right.
Sister Gidget, I know there are other announcements that need to be made. Please, Sister Gidget.
Yes, sir. And you know, I word is bond, and I promised this brother I would ask this question on his behalf. So I'm just going to ask it right quick. He says, why are we Muslims blaming everyone else for our problems when the reason... Oh, well, the reason that we're in this state is our own choices. And Brother Abdul Malik, I'm gonna let Brother Victor answer your question right quick, and then we're going to go to announcement. So, Brother Victor, do you have an answer for Brother Malik?
Well, I don't believe we blame everybody. For every cause, there's an effect. there's an effect on why we as black people, there's a book called Condemnation of Blackness and also another one called The Real Jim Crow. You should read both of those books, dear brother, because in both of those books, they explain what this world order thinks of why they say blacks are criminals, but white people commit crimes, like it's a difference. The thing is the reason why there's a supposed reason why that we're just criminals. But you did not come to that conclusion on your own. We did not come to the part where we could be 13% of the population. There is legislation. I spread legislation after legislation has for the benefit of incarcerating black people. There's crimes that like crack cocaine penalty versus powder cocaine. You will serve 90 times the sentence for crack cocaine, and you can have a barge full of powder cocaine and get 7 years. There's Jim Crow laws. There's books of segregation. There's been all of these things that were put in place for us to acquire criminal records. You cannot deny that. That's no one's. You can't sit there and say it's our own fault and it's our choices. No, there are certain people that put certain causes into place so that they can get the desired reflect effect. There are people who study us, and they study trends, they study conditions, and they study thought processes and behaviors, and they make decisions based upon those analyses. They are constantly studying the black man and woman. Why is the black woman going to prison at a rate of 400% more than she was in the past? It ain't because she's a criminal. It's because there are certain laws that have been put in effect. Three strikes laws put in effect. Four strike laws put in effect. There are certain things that this country, the people in power, political power and esteem, has put in place for the sole purpose for us to go to prison. And if you can't understand that, then you're in denial. Because the bottom line is, it is true, it's factual, it's on the books. Listen to the time of what must be done, where the minister showed that this country has the bloodiest hands, and look at what they've done, and you would have never thought that a country could be this demonic and corrupt, and now they kill millions and millions of people. It is not our fault that we're acting that way, because it is a certain condition that produces the their desired result. And when we accept the teachings of Allah, Elijah Muhammad, as taught by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we rise above those conditions. They can't put us, you know, into the trick bag anymore. We're not going to fall victim to those tricky machinations. So I thank you, brother, for your question, but we'd be foolish to say that it's our own fault.
Yes, sir. And, you know, that's okay. I'm going to pay for this extra air time because I believe our first duty is to teach our people. And I want to share with Brother Abdul Malik, you know, I know your position in your community in which you live, and it's my prayer, brother, that you don't condemn our people. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad says that we don't condemn our people, but we encourage them with truth. And so you need to understand the truth of the nature of the black man and the truth of the nature of the grafted one, and you will see that certain things are put in place in order for us to respond a particular way. Ghettos were put in place to gather people of a common economic status so that, you know, it'll create a frustration in a community that will make us turn on ourselves. So a lot of situations were created in order for us to react a certain way. So please, brother, you know, it's my prayer that you don't take that attitude with those who are caught up in the prison system, whether they are in prison or whether they are on parole, but please encourage them and be that example for them and share the teachings with them, but don't point the finger at them. And I just wanted to say that to our brother. And okay, tomorrow, join us for Young, Gifted, and Black. where the Nation of Islam hip-hop artists come out and share their music and their artistry on Monday, on Sunday. Join us for Economic Development with Brother Vernon Muhammad out of Columbia, Maryland. And on Monday, join us for Conscious Black Nation, hosted by our beloved Brother Kareem, who called in tonight, Kareem Muhammad from St. Louis, Missouri. On Tuesday, we're going to have another rebroadcast because it's the National Believers Meeting, and please send your prayers out to Brother Jihad, who is recovering from surgery, but he'll be back in 2 weeks on Tuesday night to host out on the front line with the Fruit of Islam. On Wednesday, join us for DJ Black Caesar and Friends, our hip-hop comedy show. On Thursday, I will be back, picking back up on the topic, the naked woman who will close her that was so rudely interrupted last night, but we are going to continue that segment. And on Friday, we'll be right back here with Student Minister James Muhammad talking about the time and what must be done. I think part 16, I'm not sure, I'm trying to keep up, but I want to extend a warm thank you to Student Minister Victor Muhammad and my little quiet brother over there. I thought he was quiet, Brother Ali. I see him on Facebook all the time, but who knew he had such a fiery spirit. So thank you for joining us tonight, Brother Ali. And always, my gracious brother, my minister, my friend, I just love you so much. Thank you.
Love you too, sis.
Dear sister.
All praise is due to Allah. Dear
sister, I just want to read a quote from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, sir, please.
The minister says, true prison reform starts with the enlightenment of the inmate of who that inmate is in reality and not what he or she has become because of circumstances. True prison reform reconnects the soul to its creator and begins to provide those human needs, and then we see a change in attitude in the inmate that leads to behavioral change.
Allahu Akbar.
All praises due to Allah.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, that's the end of our show. Thank you all once again. Good night, everyone. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love.
Walaikum salam.
I'm Sister Gigi.
Yes.
That information on the materials for the free book to the inmates, could you text me that information?
Yes, who is this, Brother Ali?
Yes, ma'am.
I have it, Ali.
Okay,
super. And I put it on your page because we're Facebook friends, and Brother Victor, I actually put it in your inbox.
Okay.
I couldn't post
it
on your page, but I put it in your inbox so that information is there for you as well.
Okay, thank you, dear sister. Allah bless and keep
you. You're so welcome. Yes, sir. Likewise to you, sir. Assalamu alaikum, family.
Well,
alaikum salam.